Now on Mitchell's Front Page, On the Road with Toby Hagan.
Good morning to you, Toby, for the final time in 2017.
Yeah, morning, Mitchell.
Well, I hope you've had a very good year. Has it been a good year, 2017, overall, for the world of motoring?
It has indeed, yeah. Look, I guess a sad year, given that we saw the shutdown of Australian manufacturing, something that's been happening for well, the best part of 100 years. You go back to the Ford factory down in Geelong, and obviously Australia has a proud manufacturing history. So that bit of it was sad, but a lot of milestone events along the way. And the interesting thing, I'm actually just putting together a whole bunch of stuff, or looking, I guess, into the crystal ball for next year, and next year's shaping up to be even bigger. So it's an exciting time for cars.
Without a doubt. So with Holden, they're looking at selling some slightly different branded cars next year in their dealerships. Is that correct?
Yeah, very different branded. So obviously Holden, an extremely proud Aussie brand, and next year we're going to see Chevrolet badges go up on some Holden dealerships. So they're looking to sell the Chevy Camaro, which is the sports car, the sort of Mustang, Ford Mustang rivaling sports car, and the Silverado Ute or truck, large truck that can carry up to, or tow up to 6 tonnes and carry about 1.9 tonnes in its tray. So a very heavy duty truck aimed at mining companies and farmers and people who need to tow a lot, grey nomads as well. So it's a different part of the Holden showroom is coming up. The big thing for me with this is, is this a toe-in-the-water exercise for Holden, one day potentially looking to switch the brand over to Chevrolet? There's been a lot of discussion about that over the last few years in particular, with the shutdown of that local manufacturing, given that Holden has always pretty much stood for Australian-made vehicles. That's been its bread and butter. So will they now look to go with the global branding of Chevrolet, which is GM's obviously American-focused brand, but one they take to a lot of parts of the world. So they're saying at the moment that's not the case. They're going to stick with Holden, but I dare say if the Chevy experiment's very successful, then why wouldn't you consider it in a few years?
It's a bit like Safeway in Victoria being rebranded to Woolworths to be in line with the rest of Australia. I don't think it really affected things too much here because, as you pointed out, once you lose that Australian manufacturing as part of the brand, that's sort of a big part of the perception of the brand, and then after that it doesn't really matter too much, I wouldn't have thought. And obviously it's going to be cheaper for them to keep the same brand worldwide rather than having to rebadge things with different names depending on which country they're selling it in.
Well, that's exactly right, and I dare say that's why the Safeway Woolworths thing happened, to try and, I guess, take advantage of global global branding and global marketing campaigns. And at the moment, if Chevrolet sponsors a big tennis tournament or a golfing tournament somewhere, then the rub-off won't necessarily be felt in Australia, and Holden has to do all its own branding here. So there are a lot of reasons that you look at and say, well, hey, that potentially makes sense. But at the same time, you go back and say, well, Holden's been building cars here since 1948. It's got an amazing reputation in the market. It's got obviously a lot of people who have absolutely doted over the cars over the years. It's going through a tough patch at the moment, on track this year for its worst ever sales. So it's a challenging one. But, I guess that's something all the marketers and the bosses, the execs will be looking at over the next few years as to whether that makes sense.
Now, you've been driving the new Audi.
I have Audi RS5. RS is Audi's sporty range, so it goes up against Mercedes-AMG and BMW M cars and so on. So pretty important for Audi. They've got relatively low market penetration of those performance models compared with particularly AMG, which is sort of the market leader in Australia with those sorts of vehicles. So this RS5 is an important car, $160,000-odd. It's super quick. It's got quattro four-wheel drive, and it's got it's ditched its V8 engine for a twin-turbo V6 engine. So it's exactly the same power as the old V8, but it's actually got more torque. So in terms of performance, a significant step up in performance for the new RS5, but it's lacking a little bit of character. Mitchell, this is the really interesting thing. I think when people are buying those sorts of cars, you're paying, obviously, for more than just a mode of transport. You want something a little bit exciting. So it's got to push some buttons. It's got to have some X factor, and it maybe lacks a little bit of that. What it lacks in that, it makes up for in pace. It is very clinical in terms of how brisk it is and how well it corners and gets around. It's an awesome bit of kit, but as I said, a fraction more personality wouldn't be such a bad thing.
Yeah, what gives the car personality? Are you talking about the design or some special feature that other vehicles don't have?
Look, one of the big things is the sound, and V8 engines just make an incredible noise. They're pretty much the best sounding engines in the world. To my ears, they are. So there's that noise, and engineers put a lot of effort into making cars have that special sound. It's also the way they're set up in terms of things like steering feel. How connected to the car you feel. So how good a job it does in terms of making you feel like you're really in control. And that's why your purebred sports cars tend to be smaller and lighter, and they're just a bit more agile. I mean, compare it to, I guess, a ferry and a speedboat. You know, the speedboat's obviously going to be a lot more agile, and that's sort of a similar thing in cars. You've got less weight there. It's going to point better and accelerate better and brake better. So it's not a bad way to do it.
And there's a new ute out from HSV called the Sports Cat.
Sports Cat, yeah. So everyone's been wondering what HSV is going to do post the shutdown of local manufacturing. Obviously, since 1987, when the company formed, they have been known for producing V8 versions, higher powered V8 versions of the Commodores, which they give unique names to, like Senator and Club Sport and so on. That's all ended now because they just don't have the base car to build off. There's no V8 in the 2018 imported Commodore. So they've had to look elsewhere, and what they've done is taken a Holden Colorado Ute, so a very different car to the sorts of vehicles that HSV's looked at previously. They've done some decent suspension modifications, put some new wheels and tyres on it, bigger brakes, obviously the styling enhancements to make it stand out. But what they haven't touched is the engine. So it's got the same 2.8 litre four-cylinder turbo diesel. It's one of the slowest HSVs they've ever built. So it's a very different prospect than the HSVs that we've seen in the past. But they're saying that's the sweet spot of the market. And a lot of the buyers previously buying V8s now tend to gravitate towards things like a dual cab ute. So it's, I guess, playing to the strength in that regard.
Without a doubt. And you've got a bit of an axe to grind when it comes to the design of one particular element of some of the vehicles that have been added onto the market in recent times. And I have to say, I agree with you.
Yeah, this is... I want to have a bit of a whinge about the volume knob or the volume dial, which has been in cars for decades. It's a great way to adjust the audio system, obviously very quickly put the sound up or down, depending on what you're chasing. These days, you're getting a lot of cars with buttons, and it is hugely frustrating. I mean, Toyota uses them on quite a few models, the Hilux, for example. I had a Honda Civic recently that used it, a Volkswagen Golf. So there's been all these cars where instead of just one quick, smooth motion of turning the stereo up or down, you've got to potentially take your eyes off the road for longer, but certainly press buttons for a lot longer than you would have had to with the old volume knob. So it just seems like a step backwards to me. I mean, cars have been advancing for a long time, and the vast majority of what car makers do is generally heading in the right direction. But I think in this case, they're heading in the wrong direction, and certainly some of the feedback I get is that things like that are pretty frustrating.
Do you think it's because of the aesthetics that buttons look better than knobs, or is it just because that maybe buttons are less likely to wear out compared to a knob or something like that?
I think the former, yeah, definitely the aesthetics. They like to keep that clean, and particularly with touchscreens. Obviously, they've got a system where they can have virtual buttons that change depending on what screen you're on. Now, they tend not to do that with the volume buttons on those touchscreens, but it's definitely a cleaner look, and they're trying to fit it all in with the look of the rest of the car. But as I said, it doesn't make sense from a functionality perspective. We've had a great system in the past, just stick with it.
I think that applies to a number of different areas in terms of life. I mean, when you look at designs of things, the goal of design is not to make something look good, it's to make it functional and easy and understandable for people to use. And we see this with so many different things. I mean, one that comes to mind is salt and pepper shakers, and how many times I have to redesign that and reinvent those, and they becoming possible to use. And it's just, I think, food for thought. I think that's exactly right. A very, very good point to raise.
Yeah.
And you've been driving the new Kia. Tell us about that. Only $15,000.
Yeah, Kia Picanto. This is the bottom end of the market, very much a city car. So it's fairly small. But interestingly, in the front seats, you get heaps of headroom. So it's fairly spacious from that perspective. A bit cramped in the back seats, but it's not designed to be a four or five person car regularly. It's an occasional four or five seater. Not a whole lot of power. It's got a fairly underwhelming four cylinder engine, and it's only hooked up to a four speed automatic, which these days most autos have at least six speeds. So it just lacks a bit in terms of fizz for performance. But the rest of the car is surprisingly good. It's got, for just zipping around town, it drives amazingly well in terms of the steering and the way it deals with bumps. And really impressively, it's got autonomous emergency braking. So a radar looking out of the front of the car can automatically stand on the brakes if you fail to do so, hopefully avoiding a nose-to-tail crash. So to have that technology in a $15,000 car shows you just how quickly it's going across the rest of the range.
Is that increasingly becoming standard?
It is, yeah. I mean, a lot of car makers, you look at, say, Volkswagen, Skoda, Toyota, Mazda, those sorts of brands are pretty much putting them on all their new models across the range. Some brands are dragging their feet a little bit. Holden, for example, hasn't put it on some of their models. They sort of make you step up to the more expensive versions. Jeep just came out the other day and released the new Compass. And again, that was one where they haven't put it on any model as standard. They've only made it optional on the more expensive versions. So that's a little bit disappointing that some brands are doing that. But I think over the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see an enormous swing to having that AEB system, those AEB systems, pretty much standard across everything. It's getting too big now for the car makers to ignore.
Yeah, excellent. And also, you've been driving some hot hatches around.
A few hot hatches, yeah. There's some really cool ones on the market. Now, the hot hatch market's typically started at about $40,000. I've got into the ones that are sort of the $50,000 to $60,000 mark. So Honda Civic Type R, this is the return of the Type R, which is a pretty hardcore little front drive performance car, a great engine in it, 2 litre four-cylinder turbo, and really nice gear shift. It's a big step up. This Type R is a massive step up on where they've been recently, and it's good to see Honda returning to form. Ford Focus RS, a limited edition version of the Focus RS, so it's this one's got all-wheel drive, 2.3 litre four-cylinder turbo, so a heap of punch. It's got more than 250 kilowatts of power and is a fantastic car to drive. One of the cool features it's got is a mode called Drift Mode, where you can effectively send most of the drive to the rear wheels instead of all four, and basically, yeah, do some sort of smoky drift. Now, of course, where I did try that was on a racetrack and a skid pan, where you can do it in a controlled manner, and that's where it's...
Not on a residential street.
Not on a residential street, indeed, but... and look, another one I've driven recently, the BMW M140i and M240i. So the M140 starts at 60 grand. 3 litre, six-cylinder turbocharged engine with, again, 250 kilowatts of power. And this is a real surprise package. It's a very, obviously, it's got that sort of, that German edge. It's a bit less leery than the its main hot hatch rivals in terms of looks. But in terms of performance, it nails the brief. It's got a really flexible, a fantastic engine in it. Really sweet 8-speed automatic gearbox and rear-wheel drive. So it's sort of your more purebred one. And starting at 60 grand, it's it is something of a performance bargain. We've usually seen the European car makers charge big dollars for their sort of equivalent performance cars, but this one is really on the money for what it is.
Well, Toby, thank you very much for being with us, and I appreciate your good work on the program throughout 2017. Looking forward to catching up in 2018, and no doubt when we return in sort of late January, we'll be talking about the Wheels Car of the Year.
Indeed, we will indeed. Thanks, Mitchell, and have a great break. We'll chat then.
Thank you very much. Same to you, Toby Hagen. He's done an absolutely fantastic job on the program this year, always across all of the interesting detail. And it's been really interesting for me to learn about the technology that they're putting into some of these vehicles and the way it's all changing. And as he said, things like autonomous emergency braking that are now being fitted to some of the cheaper cars as standard.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.